Now, with the Apollo 13, or any of the earlier Apollo missions, you know that sort of the entry angle is very slim. I'm wondering, like, what's the difference and difficulty for the entry angle before it either bounces off the atmosphere or burns in entry?
Yeah, it's a narrow window of a few degrees either way. And what he's referring to is when you come back into the atmosphere, you pitched up very steeply. If you come in too steep, the vehicle will just break up. You'll overstress the vehicle. If you come in too low, you actually skip out again and don't come in. And it's like a margin of a few degrees either way to get it right. And we have automatic guidance systems that tell us the control of the vehicle and its descent to keep it within those limits. Yes?
Were there any problems aboard?
No, not really. We had a very successful flight. The Space Hab module that I was in one day got really cold because it's cooled by a water system, recirculation system, and a valve got stuck. But we did an in-flight repair to correct that. That was very minor. Everything worked well. The launch worked very well. We had no system failures during launch or during entry. On orbit, we had no system failures, and the experiments all worked well. I think it was a very successful flight. Is there a question from up here somewhere? And I don't think there's a microphone up there, so you're going to have to just shout really loud. Perhaps the girl up in the back there? Yes. How long have I been in engineering? All my life, basically. I mean, I studied engineering as a student and then worked as a professional engineer for nearly 20 years. It's a good profession to have if you want to be an astronaut. Over there.
What did you eat in space?
What did we eat in space, he asks. We ate a variety of foods. We have the kind of food that you might take on a camping trip. You know, it's that freeze-dried food, prepackaged freeze-dried, and you rehydrate it, and it's actually pretty good. I mean, I ate well in space, but I put on weight, actually. Not a bad thing to do when you're weightless. But the food was good. I enjoyed it, but of course, I have to cook for myself at home, so anything tasted good. Perhaps some questions down here now. Over there.
Go into space, do you have to pop physical shape, like really fit?
No, you need to be reasonably fit, but you don't need to be an Olympic athlete because the loads now are not as severe as they used to be. You do have to have good cardiovascular conditioning, and most of us get that by running or treadmills or something like that. Another thing too is you don't want to be, you know, like a Schwarzenegger type, because the spaces are confined, and if you're big like that, you don't have flexibility to move around, so somewhere sort of compromise.
Yeah, how long can you survive in space before your bone density and your muscle mass has detrimental effects on you as a being?
Well, that's an open question. What he's referring to is the fact that when you go into orbit and stay there weightless for extended periods of time, your bones seem to suffer a mineral loss, and lean muscle mass seems to go away. Not unlike what happens to bedridden patients. And it starts on orbit and plateaus out after a month or so. It seems to level out. But the $64 question is, what is the long-term effect of this? And that's what research is now trying to address. I don't think we know the answer to that yet. Up there?
What was it like eating with... What was it like eating your food up in space?
It's easy to eat in space. You know, you might think it's hard to swallow something, but it's not. And if you think about it, you might have hung upside down and swallowed. You can swallow, but you can swallow in weightlessness too. It's not hard. The food is all prepackaged in small containers, and you just have to be very careful when you open them because it will float around everywhere. Like, I remember once I had a little bag of peanuts I opened, and someone bumped me, and I just had peanuts all over the place, just reaching around and grabbing peanuts out of the sky. So, okay? Yeah.
Did you have any medical problems?
No. No, we didn't. We carried a medical kit on board in the event that someone might get hurt or cut themselves or something, but no, there were no medical problems with any of the crew. Yes.
Is it possible to become an astronaut with a science degree?
Yeah. Astronauts come from a variety of backgrounds. We have scientists, engineers, physicians, medical doctors. We have a few veterinarians in the office. Plus we have test pilots. So there's all kinds of professionals represented in the astronaut office. Science is right up there, yeah.
How did you have a shower?
We didn't. What we do is we have hot and cold running water, basically, and we would wet down sponges with soap on them and take sponge baths, kind of like people in hospital do. But I must tell you, when I got back to the ground, that first hot shower felt really good. It was great.
What's it like to drink in space?
It's just the same as drinking on Earth. It's no different. Somewhere down here? Oh. Yes.
What kind of courses and stuff do the mission specialists tend to have taken?
You mean while they're astronauts or
What qualification?
In what?
Like what courses? Like you did engineering, do they tend to have done?
All kinds. I mean, I'm a mechanical engineer. We have electrical engineers. We have geologists. We have physicists. We have astrophysicists. It's not just a question of what course you take. It's a question of what you do professionally when you graduate. What kind of work do you do in the work environment? What kind of problems do you address? Are they relevant to the space program? That's what's important.
How long will it be for the first manned mission that I have on space shuttles and mission control?
Okay, first one, how long before a manned mission to Mars? I think it's going to be many years before we see a human mission to Mars. I think we're going to build the space station first, then I think we'll return to the moon, then we'll do robotic exploration of Mars. In fact, we're starting that now, really. And then perhaps human travel to Mars. But I would think 25 years from now for Mars. The other question, computers. We have a variety of computers on board. The shuttle itself has 4 onboard computers. Actually, they're dedicated computers. Actually, there's 5 that provide guidance information. That's done for redundancy. In addition to those, we carry a lot of those laptop computers for providing information to run the shuttle. Mission Control uses a lot of Sun workstations.
Would you ever think about going back to space?
Yes, I will be. I've joined the pool of astronauts now that's awaiting reassignment, but because I just got back, it's going to be a while before I get to fly again, probably a couple of years, but I have every hope that I will be on another flight in the next couple of years. That's what I chose to be an astronaut to do. This is not a one-time deal. You can fly again.
You've spoken a lot about the sort of mechanical and engineering aspects of your profession.
Yeah. Waving the flag a bit, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. What about the philosophical aspects of being an astronaut and being out there in space? Have you got any comments on that?
Well, I'm asked that sort of question a lot. It's an interesting thing to do because when you're weightless, you are living in an environment that is so alien to everything that you're ever accustomed to on the ground that it's actually very hard to describe it and put it in terms, in the frame of reference of something we're accustomed to doing. And that's what makes it just such a unique experience. It's exciting from that point of view. The view is spectacular. The view is deeply moving. There's no doubt about it. From my own personal viewpoint, this whole flight has given me a lot of contentment because I had a very tough professional, personal goal that I wanted, and I was able to achieve it, and that's personally very rewarding to me.
As an adjunct to that, what sort of psychological preparation did you have? There must have been a lot of pressure on you in the build-up, and then when you're actually in space, did you ever sort of experience claustrophobia or...?
No, just the last part, claustrophobia. I didn't. We are actually tested for claustrophobia in our interview process. They put us in a 1 meter diameter ball that's completely dark and black, and close it up and leave us in there and measure our heart rate. And if you start panicking, they just pull you out and you don't become an astronaut. I went to sleep when I did that. Most of us don't have tendencies to claustrophobia, but in any case, we had quite a lot of room. I mean, you can see in the video, we actually had a good bit of room. We had the flight deck, the mid deck, this long tunnel out to the space hab and the space hab module. We had a good bit of space, which was nice. There isn't actually formal psychological training. There is a fairly intensive psychological screening process you go through when you get selected or when you get interviewed to be an astronaut. You know, I guess just to make sure that you've got stable personality, compatible with sort of social environment, that, you know, there's no unhealthy psychoses or something like that. Yes? He asked if you have to have any flight experience to become an astronaut. If you want to be a pilot astronaut, then that's the one who actually flies the vehicle in. Then that clearly requires flight experience, military jets and experience as a test pilot. In my case as a mission specialist, it's not actually a requirement, but because we spend so much time flying and working with flight-type vehicles, which the shuttle is, it's something you really should have. An interest in things aviation is fairly important to being an astronaut.
Possibly a small question. What do you reward a sailor, i.e. motion sickness?
What about motion sickness?
It's a blue water sailor, like you had virtually had an horizon look at, but it seemed to be going everywhere.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting thing that it does go everywhere because the vehicle's always turning around and there's no up or down, and the visual cues are a bit confusing. But that's not what causes any nausea. The biggest effect causing nausea when you first get into space is zero gravity, because the fluids in your inner ear, which control your balance and which send signals to the stomach about nausea, are all messed up. They're all just floating everywhere. And it's very common, once you get into space, after a few hours, to feel a bit of nausea. I did. But it usually passes quickly. And once it passes, then it's just a great sensation. Then you can just move around with such a freedom that's wonderful. Is there a microphone over there?
What did you do in the meantime?
What did I do?
What did you do in the meantime but while you're waiting?
Oh, yes, while I'm waiting for my next flight, what do I do? All the astronauts who are waiting for flights go into a pool and support the flight program in some capacity. And what I'm doing is supporting launches and landings at the Kennedy Space Center. And so I'm the astronaut that will go into a shuttle before launch and help configure it for liftoff, help set up the seats for the crew, set up their parachutes, activate all the communication equipment, and everything that the crew are going to need before launch, then strap them in just before launch and then close the hatch and send them on their way, and then do the reverse when it lands. Open the hatch when it lands, go in and help them out. So that's what I'll be doing. And I was in Atlantis, the one that landed just the other day, just before I left for Australia, and prepared it for launch up to the Mir space station. Could you get the microphone to... Oh, okay, just... You're next, all right? Yeah.
Has this been the highlight of your career, and what do you consider the most important space mission?
Is this the highlight of my career? Yes, it certainly is. This is a tough act to follow. What is the most important space mission? It depends how you measure it. And if you measure it in terms of science, probably the Hubble repair mission was a really spectacular mission. In terms of operations, all these flights we're doing to the Mir space station are very important because that's teaching us a great deal, and we're learning a lot from the Russians.
Toilet.
In the bathroom. We have a small cubicle which we call Waste Control System, or WCS, and that has all the necessary plumbing and fixtures to allow you to conduct that operation. Yes.
Yes. Do you see any other space debris or other things up there?
No space debris, no flying saucers.
And what is involved in making sure the flight doesn't get hit by anything?
Yeah. I think the question concerns debris. It turns out that in orbit there's a lot of junk floating around, and that stems to a large extent from a lot of spy satellites that were launched at one time, and which, after they'd done their thing, they would just blow them up. The Russians did that a lot. So there's a lot of junk up there in some areas. Junk is being tracked by radars, and for each flight we look carefully at where the flight's going relative to some of that stuff, because we don't want to run into it. And they determined for our flight that the probability of taking a hit was minuscule.
What's the actual cost of a space shuttle, and how much does it cost for one launch, and what's the cost justification, both economically and philosophically, for a shuttle mission?
I think each orbiter when it's new costs something like $1 billion, but I'm not sure of the exact number. Each shuttle mission costs about $300 million. It's a bit hard to define because it depends how you cost out the payload that it carries. The justification for doing it is that we are trying to build an infrastructure that will take us into space. And if you're going to space, whether you're going to go to the moon or to Mars or anywhere, it's important that you first get to low Earth orbit, and when you come back, to do the reverse. That's the hard part. It's launch into orbit and entry from orbit. It's the hard part of any space mission. Well, the shuttle provides us with the capability to do that, and it's a research tool aimed at doing that function. It's getting humans into space and back again safely. Yeah.
Did you get to, float outside, in space?
No. Did I get to float outside? No. We did not have a spacewalk on this mission. It was not one scheduled. One day I hope to get to do that, because I've been trained to do it, and I think it would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Were you ever afraid that something might have gone wrong?
No, it crossed my mind, but I would have to say I never actually felt fear. I felt, in the launch, for example, I felt more curiosity. And I felt a disappointment when it was over, because it was over so quickly. I wanted to go back and do it again. Yes, another one there, right there.
Do you have any way of monitoring the pollution that gets released as the launch or the boosters enter the atmosphere again?
It actually doesn't cause much pollution. The solid rocket boosters produce a cloud that's got some aluminium phosphate in it, I think it ends up, I'm not sure, and some acid, which usually falls after the launch down onto the ground around the Kennedy Space Center. The engines themselves burn hydrogen and oxygen and just make water. So I don't consider this vehicle to be a contributor to pollution at all. It's definitely not. Yes, the source of electrical energy was fuel cells. We carry cryogenic hydrogen and oxygen, which we burn in fuel cells electrochemically to make electricity and water. We actually have three fuel cells. They're about 10 kilowatts each. And the water that's produced from that combustion, we drink. But we actually produce an excess of water, so each day we would have to do a water dump and squirt water out the side because you produce excess water. But fuel cells is the main power source on orbit. There are no solar panels, no batteries. Yes. Are the computers on Endeavour more advanced than the other ones because Endeavour's the most recent vehicle? No, you don't want to do that either, because even though it's a more modern vehicle, you want all your vehicles to be the same so that the crew procedures for operating them are all the same, so the maintenance is all the same. Otherwise it gets expensive if you customise each vehicle, so they're the same.
What was going through your mind during takeoff, and also do you still see the other astronauts?
Oh yeah, I was sitting on the flight deck behind the pilot and commander, and another crewman was to my left. I was watching out with a mirror, as I said, looking out into the flame trench. At 6 seconds before liftoff, the engine started. I could feel a vehicle lurch. I could see this big plume of exhaust going into the flame trench. And it was counting down, 3, 2, 1. And right at zero, everything happened at once. There was just this big explosion at the base of the vehicle as the solid rocket boosters were ignited. And there was a big lurch and a real kick in the pants as we went, just get hurled upward. You know, it's like that rush you feel if you step into a really fast elevator, except much more so. And I could see the ground just rushing away from us. I saw the launch tower disappear out the side window, the ground just rushing away. I could see all the launch tower and all the exhaust behind us. And then we did a roll. If you've ever seen a shuttle launch, it, as it goes up, it twists and rolls out over the ocean. And as soon as that roll started, the ground just spun wildly in the view that I had. I could see the launch pads disappear out of view, the beach go by because we're on the coast, and then the ocean. And then I just saw the ocean getting further away. I see clouds rushing by occasionally. And then as we went up to solid rocket booster separation, you know, the thrust suddenly tailed off. And once you lose all that thrust from the solid rocket boosters, it feels like you're stopping, which would be a really bad thing to do at this point. But you're not stopping. What you're doing is you're not just accelerating as much. And you sort of feel like you're being thrown forward and down, but you're not. But as the thrust tails off and they're separated, there's this incredible yellow flash around the whole front of the vehicle as these separation bolts fire to release them. I mean, the whole front of the vehicle explodes. It raises your heartbeat a couple of notches, I can tell you. And then once you've dumped them, you've got rid of all that weight. Now you're just sitting on the main engines. It's a much smoother ride. The solid rocket boosters really shake you wildly. But the main engines, you're just coasting. They just purr beautifully, and you just go faster and faster and faster. And you accelerate and accelerate. You get up to 3 Gs of acceleration. And at that point, they start throttling back the main engines, not to overstress the vehicle or overstress the crew. And at 8.5 minutes, you're in orbital velocity. You're about 70 miles high, 17,500 miles an hour, and you're there. And everything's weightless. The engines just cut down, and just all of a sudden, everything's weightless. Suddenly all this G-force is gone, and everything you've got that's not tied down is just floating around the crew compartment. It's a great ride. Yeah.
Do you believe in the existence of life elsewhere in the universe?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that given the tenacity of life as it appears to have on Earth, I mean, you can find it in deep in mines, in hydrothermal vents at the bottom of the ocean, arid deserts. I mean, it's really tenacious thing, life. I have every confidence that it does exist elsewhere in the universe. Now, if you're going to ask me, has that life visited us, I'd have to say no, I don't think it has.
Yes. When do you think mankind will begin mining the resources on the moon and the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter?
Well, we've got to get to Mars before we go to the asteroid belt. Resources on the moon, maybe mined for research purposes, 30 years. Asteroid belt, I couldn't even guess, you know, further out than that. I'd be just purely pulling a number out of the air if I was to try. How do you compare the Russian life support systems to the American life support systems? I'm not closely familiar with the Russian life support systems on Mir. I do know about the difference in the Russian spacesuit versus the US spacesuit. The Russians seem to have the capability of designing less redundancy than we have. We do everything by multiple layers of redundancy. So if something fails, you've got a backup system. If the backup fails, you've got another system. The Russians seem to have less redundancy, but seem to have much tougher, stronger designs, much more rugged designs. We should not underestimate the Russian capability. They've had a permanent presence in space for 10 or more years. It's really a remarkable achievement.
What was your favorite view?
What was my favorite view? Actually, the favorite view I had was the first time I looked out the window. Just after we got to orbit and we were in zero gravity, my job, while everyone else was staying seated, was to unstrap, get out of my seat, and float up to the window and take a picture of that large external tank, which we just released behind us, because they like to document it for engineering. So there was I, flailing around with gloves and helmet and parachute harness, making a complete fool of myself, and the rest of the crew were just sort of chuckling away and saying, "Welcome to zero gravity, Andy." And anyway, I finally got to the window with this camera, and I looked out the window, and I literally gasped, because it was just so awe-inspiring to see this, the blue earth where we'd come. I mean, it's really nice blue with white clouds high up, seeing it as a curved sphere for the first time, with this thin band of atmosphere on the horizon. The atmosphere really is very thin. We need to take care of it. And then above it is the blackness of space. And space is really black. It's really a unique black. It's the kind of black you see if you look at a total solar eclipse, which I don't recommend you do. But it's really just a beautiful black. And that was the view. And then about a mile behind us was this large tank, just a bit charred from the launch, just slowly tumbling around behind us. Beautiful sight.
Could you please tell me the sort of backup systems that you have in terms of the human resources on board the shuttle? Obviously, if something goes wrong with the pilot of the shuttle, what sort of backups have you got, and do you all act as understudies to each other?
Yes. Actually, the commander has primary responsibility for flying the shuttle. If he is incapacitated, the pilot in the right seat will fly it. If he is incapacitated, one of the mission specialists would fly it, although they wouldn't really want to do that, and probably what they would do is do an auto sequence of landing. For every system on board and for every experiment, one crew member was trained as primary responsibility for that system or that experiment, and another crewman was backup. So we had two people for everything. So if one person was incapacitated, then there'd be someone else available. That was the basic philosophy. I think we've got time for one more question from up there.
Was it always a dream to go on to space and be an astronaut?
Yes, it's something that I always had a passion for. I never thought when I was growing up that I could actually do it, though. It wasn't until the late 80s that I realized that I could make it happen, and that's when I applied in 1992 and got selected and began training, and it's been a wonderful experience ever since then. Well, I think at this point we should defer the questions, and I believe we have alright, one enthusiastic question.
Did your ears pop when you landed?
No, they didn't actually, because it's a pressurized cabin. It's not like an aeroplane, which actually changes its pressure as you go up a little bit. It's a pressurized cabin. It's the same pressure we have in here right now. It's the same kind of air, and so my ears didn't pop. Thanks.